Mark Maron started his podcast WTF in 2009 out of his garage. Today, after close to 900 episodes and with 6 million downloads each month, WTF is considered the go-to podcast for long-form, intimate conversations with comedians, artists, and celebrities like Mel Brooks, Amy Poehler, and Barack Obama. For their new book called Waiting for the Punch, Mark Maron and WTF's executive producer Brendan McDonald have compiled a collection of hundreds of interviews on some of the issues that we all wrestle with: failure, success, mortality, relationships. It is published by Flatiron Books, and it brings Mark Maron back to our show. Welcome back.
Thanks. Nice to see you, Leonard.
And let's begin with a short clip, Mark, from your WTF interview with Bruce Springsteen.
I didn't trust anybody after my parents left and after I had some very close people who died on me, my grandparents. I said, whoa, this world will kick your ass and burn you inside out. I don't trust anything or anybody that I haven't built myself.
Part of the appeal of your podcast is the way you sometimes get your guests to talk very openly and honestly about intimate aspects of their lives, and you sure could hear that.
It choked me up. It's strange when I'm in those conversations, I don't hear them the same as when you play me a segment. You know that.
Yes. Well, you are aware of the fact that somebody is being very open.
Right.
And on the other hand, you're still thinking about what the next question is going to be and how much more time.
Right. You're in the present and you're not. Every time, even when reading the book, I'm like, did I have this conversation? This is a great conversation.
Well, you don't think of yourself as an interviewer, you say. You think of yourself as a conversationalist and a kind of a needy one?
Yeah. Oh, sure. Yeah, because I think if you listen to the beginnings of the podcast, I needed some resolution around some things. I was uncomfortable with myself. I was angry. And it was the talking to other people that enabled me to get out of myself a little.
And so over the years, you have the podcast itself has been kind of therapeutic?
Definitely. It's been therapeutic. It's taught me how to be an empathetic listener. It's taught me how to get out of myself a little bit, to be there for other people. It's certainly been therapeutic. I look forward to talking to people to get out of myself. Like just that Bruce Springsteen thing, it was surprising. I got emotional because when I was in it, you know, that was one I did out in Jersey. I was at his place and, you know, I was nervous. I'm talking to Bruce. And once you're in it, you're locked in. And you don't have any distance. You don't have any moment.
But do you ever find yourself pushing for those kinds of moments?
Sure. I don't know if it's pushing as much as just kind of taking a chance with asking the next question. You can feel that. You've been here. You do it.
You have received letters from listeners telling you how much you've helped them through some of these discussions. Do you think it's because you've been so open about your own problems?
Yeah, I think that it's that. And I think it's also when I speak to people that people look up to or they're fans of or they think live in a different world, to hear other people, like in the book, talk about their problems that are common to the problems that an individual has, it makes them feel less alone.
One of your sections is on success. Mm. Success seems like an ultimate goal, but it has its own problems.
Well, it does. I used to talk about how when people say, money doesn't solve all your problems. I used to do a joke about how, I'd like to have that observation, like in my own pool, you know, on a raft. But it's true that there are certain things you don't worry about once you get successful, but there are new worries for sure. And some of the core issues of that may define your psychological and emotional disposition may not get better.
Well, it seems like the wise thing is to say that success isn't important. We should just be happy with doing good work, whether we're recognized or not. But I don't know anyone for whom recognition and titles aren't important.
Well, there are those people. There are people that, you know, sort of humbly go about chipping away, doing the good work, doing the big work, doing important work for others that don't expect to have stories written about them or to be on a cover of a book. Those people are not in entertainment, but you know.
And every once in a while, somebody will complain that he or she gets stopped in the street way too much, and the rest of us say, oh, boo-hoo. But you write, despite several years of conversations on the podcast with very talented and successful people, talk of success comes up much less frequently than discussion of failure.
Yeah. Well, I think that's what you remember, that if you do get successful and you are cognizant and aware of what got you there, there's usually a lot of persistence, a lot of disappointment, a lot of failure, a lot of tough knocks, both career-wise and personally. And I think those are, especially for people that are ambitious and keep working at something, the memories of the bad stuff can really stick with you.
Todd Hansen of The Onion, among other things, talked about his attempted suicide in WTF. Todd Glass, a comedian, came out on your show. Yep. Others have talked about being bipolar. Mm. What motivates guests to talk about such private things publicly, especially since they must be aware somewhere in the back of their head, no matter how intimate the setting is for the discussion, that people are going to be listening in?
It's a good question, Leonard. I don't know. It is a cozy environment, and the best thing that can happen is that after a half hour or 20 minutes, they forget they're on a mic. We are in my garage. They're surrounded with my stuff, books, and pictures. But I think it's also my need to connect with somebody personally. And I guess the way I have conversations about people's well-being and about, how they keep it together is very personal for me. So I think they approach it personally.
I'm speaking to Mark Maron, who has collaborated with his producer.
Sure.
Brendan McDonald on a book called Waiting for the Punch, Words to Live By, from the WTF podcast. It has a foreword by John Oliver.
Yeah. So that's a good, yeah.
That was a get.
Sure. Well, I emailed him. You don't know what to do with those emails. I have people's phone numbers and emails that have been on the show. And sometimes you're like, well, I'm never going to. Why would I call this person? But John's always been very supportive. We did a great interview together. I've done his TV show, not the new one, but the stand-up comedy one. And he's just a lovely guy. And he was very quick to say yes.
You have sections on a number of different topics. One of them is parenting. Mm. And you begin your section on parenting with, I think anyone who knows my work at all knows I'm not too happy with the way I was parented. It's okay. You can't choose them. It's random. I'm not mad at them anymore.
Yeah. Well,
Should I get past being angry at my father?
At this point, Leonard, I think maybe. If you
when
can,
did it become okay for you?
If you can, let it go. When it starts to dictate who you are, when the anger becomes a defining quality of your personality, which it does, at some point, I don't know. I don't know what happened with your dad, but at some point I realized that he doesn't have the upper hand anymore, that, he's frail, that, his shortcomings are also coupled with some good things I got from him. I still have a relationship with him. And also, I don't expect anything from him anymore.
My father's dead. I can't do any of that. But that's a whole other
matter. You can sit down and do it in your heart, Leonard. You can do it.
The section on parenting includes guests' experiences of growing up, but also being parents themselves. Louis C.K. talked about the birth of his daughter. Ali Wong pumped breast milk during your interview.
She did. I'd never seen that before because I don't have kids or a wife right now. And it was kind of jarring, but exciting. It was very exciting to hear it on the mic and hear me go like, oh, it's happening. Like my excitement of it. It was a first, I think.
You write that parenting, in addition to death, dictates how we live out our lives on a core level. How did talking to guests about their experiences as parents affect you in that way?
Well, it's interesting because a lot of people, I've talked to people that didn't expect to be parents. I've talked to people that wanted nothing more to be parents. I've talked to people that, want to do it differently than their parents. And all these issues, I'm a guy I didn't have kids and I've been married twice. And there was some sort of choice I made where I realized that I'm too panicky, I'm too nervous, I'm too worried, I'm too selfish to do this. And I don't think that was a bad decision. So I have a certain freedom of mind that people that have embarked on it, they don't. So they are able to see their kids grow up. And on some level, that indicates their own mortality. Whereas I can just, not have kids and sit around and worry about death in a very pure way.
Why did you call the book Waiting for the Punch?
I think it was something Judd Apatow said, and I think it implied something It has double meaning. You know, waiting for the punch could be waiting for the punchline. Waiting for the punch could be waiting to be punched in the face. It could be death. It could be something good. It just was a beautifully ambiguous yet poetic title.
And Judd Apatow is a great idea man. Why not take something else from him?
Sure. I mean, he's been a great supporter of the show. He's in touch with me a lot. He listens to the show regularly. We've interviewed each other at different times. He's a friend.
You begin your chapter on addiction with, once you know you have the bug, you know it can feed on almost anything. Mm-hmm. Drugs, food, booze, gambling, spending, people, sex, etc. What's the bug?
Well, the bug is addiction. I mean, that's the component of the addictive personality. I call
Russell Brand was on our show the other day. He says everybody's addictive on some level.
I guess I don't know that's true. I mean, certainly, you know, he can, you know, rationalize his own problems any way he wants, but no, I mean, people who have it that are that compulsive, that need things in a way that is dangerous to themselves or others, that's the bug. People wanting things and, you know, getting hungry for things is not necessarily the bug.
Does it help you when you talk with other people who've struggled along those lines?
Of course. I mean, that is the premise of sort of mainstream recovery, is that when you talk to somebody who shares your problem, it gets you out of view for a while, and it actually helps them, and it'll help you in the long run.
And it's led to you receiving a fair amount of mail from listeners who thanked you for helping them work things out for themselves?
Sure. You know, there's a lot of people in different parts of the world, in different parts of the country, that don't know how to embark on getting sober or you know, first there's the psychological issues where people write me and they feel less alone and it helped them get you know, active. But the sobriety thing, if people write me about that, I generally direct them in some way to go take care of it. I know how I take care of it. I'm pretty open about being in recovery and using AA. So, you know, I definitely recommend that to people, and I try to respond as being part of the service of the program.
And you've been open about having started WTF out of a sense of desperation.
Sure.
What did you think? Your career was going down the tubes? You couldn't get on Saturday Night Live?
It was going down the tubes. And no, I couldn't get on Saturday Night Live. I tried, and I was old. I was in my 40s. And I wasn't selling tickets. It didn't look like things were working out. I was near broke from two divorces, or the second one primarily. And yeah, I was desperate, and I needed to keep working. And Brendan and I had worked together at Air America, and you know, he's a genius, and he's been with me now for like, you know, a long time as my producer. And we figured out how to do this, and it saved my life, and it made us you know, a business for both of us.
But I've always thought you were a funny guy.
Yeah.
And I've seen other people on Saturday Night Live who didn't strike me as any funnier than you. Do you have any idea why Lorne Michaels didn't put you on the show?
Yes, I interviewed Lorne, and I went down to 30 Rock, and I sat with him. He agreed to be interviewed, and I sat with him. And we went over my audition. You know, I had a meeting with him, and we went over it beat for beat. He indulged me because I'd been obsessed with it and talked about it with everybody who's been on that show. And he basically said, I just didn't have a spot for you that year. And then I said, well, yeah, I'm available. So we'll see.
Yeah, they lost a whole bunch of people at the end of last season.
Yeah, I don't think that call's covered.
So, but did that satisfy you?
He was very nice. And, you know, he said if I needed to talk more, he would make himself available again. We did two sittings. He was very nice, and it changed my entire outlook on him. And maybe that's what he wanted.
Does the political climate change things?
Yeah, it's terrifying.
Do you think that, have you seen differences on WTF interviews because of the new administration?
Sure. You know, certainly at the beginning, when we talked to Lin-Manuel Miranda, you know, and it was shortly after the election or maybe after he took office, people who have, you know, are generally, you know, open-minded and liberal and care about, you know, progressive things are terrified and remain terrified and are trying to do the best they can within this situation.
And Lin-Manuel Miranda has been very critical of the the U.S. government's role in helping Puerto Rico.
Yes, and as he should. And I think he put together a beautiful song with a lot of other concerned people. He was right at the beginning when we talked to him, which was shortly after the election, I believe. He was already proactive. He was ready to fight.
We have no time left. I have to tell people that you'll be signing books at Union Square Barnes & Noble store at 33 East 17th Street. That's Union Square West. That's tomorrow night at 7. For more information, people can go to our show page at wnyc.org/Lopate. But you do have a section on mortality as well. Mm-hmm. Do you think a lot about dying?
Yeah, every night. You?
No.
Really?
I read the obituaries every day, and I will say something like, gee, 5 years younger than me. Oh, I still have 6 more years to go. Mark Maron's book is called Waiting for the Punch, written with the help of Brendan McDonald. Thank you so much for being on our show. The book, by the way, is published by Flatiron Books.
Thanks, Leonard.